Hi, this is Dan Gilvezan, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Terrain seems a bit unstable. No readout yet if the air is breathable. And there seems to be no sign of intelligent life anywhere.
Hello?
Oh, yeah!
Ah! Whoa! Hey, whoa, 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 whoa. Did I frighten you? Didn't mean to. Sorry, howdy. My name is Woody, and this is Andy's room.
Hello, and welcome to the 61st episode of Tooncast Beyond, brought to you by the Geekcast Radio Network. I am your host, TFGN Mike. Joining me today is Doug Abel from Talking About My Generation. Hello.
Hello, sir.
How are you?
Better.
Yeah. It's like, you got to get up at 0600. What does the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
Exactly. Exactly. There's not enough coffee yet.
So today in episode 61, we are celebrating 20 years of a franchise. That would be the Toy Story franchise. 20 years ago this year, 1995, Toy Story basically pretty much launched Pixar.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been 20 years for this film. Jesus. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing it. I remember going to Comic-Con the summer of 95. Good mm-hmm. God, I've been going for 24 years. But I remember going in the summer of 95, and there was a panel there for Toy Story. And John Lasseter was there, and he was talking about the film. And I remember seeing it and going, oh, this is going to be cool. This is going to be awesome. And I just went, okay, yeah, I've got to see this film. And ever since then, I mean, I remember saying to everybody after seeing this panel, I wanted to work for Pixar. So that should tell you how good that this film has made so many people feel.
These movies are, all three of them, are just simply amazing, folks. They just are.
Oh, yeah.
And the characters that they've created, you know, the lives that they've touched. I mean, who the hell would have ever thought you'd have Wallace Shawn and Cliff Clavin from Cheers in something like this? Because for me, Wallace Shawn, the only thing I knew of his before this was a little role that he did as the villain in a film most people don't know about, starring Corey Haim. It was The 00 Kid, and Wallace Shawn, along with Brigitte Nielsen from Beverly Hills Cop 2, were the villains in that.
Oh, see. The villain I remember him as was out of The Princess Bride, you know.
Well, yeah, come everybody on. Remembers that. But, mm-hmm. So, yeah, we got Toy Story here. You got Turner and Alan. You got Turner and Toolman Tim. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. So you got Tom Hanks, Tim Allen. man, I remember this, the first film. I remember when it came out. I don't think I saw it in theaters, but oh, man, did I want that soundtrack.
Oh, God.
When it first came out. It was just so, so awesome. So, setting the stage here, we're going to do an overall discussion on the franchise. We're not going to break each movie down. We are going to talk about each movie's general plot and talk about our favorite moments here and there. And if there's anything we don't like, which I seriously doubt that, and then we'll get into the who's who and all that stuff. But the way that I've broken the script down, even though you people can't see it, is, you know, talking about it all at once. And the plot for the first film basically, I mean, this is the most awesome concept where the toys pretend to be lifeless but they really aren't. I mean,
oh yeah.
That is just so cool. It's kind of like the old adage of, you know, the kid getting his hand caught in the candy jar.
Yeah, that's...
Well, seriously, because if you look at the first film and you look at the plot of it, it's, you know, starting out, you know, the toys are, we see this scene of them being played with and whatever else, and then Andy goes downstairs or whatever else, and then the toys come to life, which you don't, you know, even though I was only, you know, I mean, I was only 15 when this movie came out, even as a 15-year-old, I did not expect the toys to come to life, no matter how many times I had seen the trailer before that.
Oh, yeah.
And they all have individual personalities, obviously, they all, but just the adventures that they have, you know, we meet a bunch of characters. We meet Woody, we meet Slinky Dog, we meet Rex, the T-Rex, we meet Ham, the piggy bank, Bo Peep, we meet Drill Sergeant Hartman. I'm sorry.
Yes, yes.
People, if you don't know, Arlie Ermey, who is in Full Metal Jacket, is the lead sergeant of the army men in these movies. Once again, perfect casting for that.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And this movie is basically all about, you know, Woody being Andy's toy, his favorite toy, his toy he's had forever. And then Andy is... he and his mom are moving, they're downsizing, and they really don't, thank God, this is a kid's movie. They don't need to Frozen it, what they've done, you know, the last two or three years with certain Disney films, but they don't really focus on the whys that they are moving. We just know that they're moving to a new house, and what seems like it's going to be a smaller house, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. So everybody's going to get ready for moving day, and also during this time, it's going to be Andy's birthday, or it will be by the time they move, so his mom has the party a few days early. And the coolest thing about this is the army men do the recon on the birthday party.
Oh, that whole scene was just classic, especially when you see one get stepped on, and Sarge, I'm down. Go on without me.
You know, and the funny thing is, when I rewatched all three of these films like 2 days ago, right before we did the recording here, that scene, the only thing I can compare it to is the body of Nick Nitro will not die in vain from Small Soldiers, because Nick Nitro ended up in the garbage disposal in the city.
Yes.
But yeah, so you get the army men, basically the toys are all the toys are always worried about that they're going to be replaced by the next new thing, the next big thing, the next toy. And Woody is especially kind of not really, but he doesn't want to let it on that he's worried about it, but he really is. And the army men report back about, you know, coloring books and puzzles and whatever. And I like, I think it's Ham or Potato Head. Oh, and you know, we'll talk about the voice cast in a little bit, but Potato Head. Oh, God, Don Rickles as Potato Head. I don't think anyone that is, you know, anyone that was younger than we were back when this movie came out, I don't think anyone, that any child that saw this movie can now not envision Don Rickles' voice as Mr. Potato Head anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
So either he or Ham or somebody says, you know, one of the kids that come to the party give Andy this weird notebook or something, or like, what kind of present is that? It's some weird remark from them. And they all think it's going to be all cool, everything's fine, no more presents. And then mom, you know, brings out the hidden present from the closet, and turns out it's going to be a Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah.
And, you know, Andy's at that crucial age where, you know, he's liked the cowboy stuff, you know, up until now and whatever else. And, you know, I remember as a kid, you know, changing toys like it wasn't no tomorrow when I saw a new commercial for a new toy that looked really cool. So it's that kind of thing where Andy's always going to love Woody, but right now he needs to look at the new shiny toy. And
well, and it was also an interesting change too, because it was Woody was the top dog for years and years and years, and all of a sudden he's kind of being replaced. And I don't really want to say replaced, but that was the feeling that he was getting throughout the film, was that Buzz was coming in and taking his place and basically pushing him out from being top toy.
Right, right.
So.
And the way the animators and the producers and the director did this, the reveal of Buzz Lightyear was just amazing.
Oh, God, yes.
All the other toys looking up on the bed because Andy comes in the room, puts Buzz in Woody's spot, and then goes out and has cake and ice cream and whatever else for the rest of the birthday party. And this leaves the rest of the toy gang to wonder what's up there. And they all go up there, and we have the first interactions between Tim Allen and Tom Hanks. And these two, I can never not see them doing these two characters. Oh my God.
There's nobody else who could pull this off after seeing this.
And as the films progress, it gets better and better, because obviously, as this first film goes on and on and on, we have, Buzz asserting his newness, and Woody still being jealous, and it makes it look like Woody's trying to get rid of Buzz. And
oh yeah, and the other part is that Buzz doesn't think he's a toy, so that makes it even funnier. Yeah. You know, everybody else knows that they're a toy. Buzz Lightyear still thinks he's, you know, the leader of Space Command. And
absolutely. And it's just so funny when Woody tries to point out all this stuff to him, when he opens his space helmet, when he just sits there and shakes him. You are a child's plaything.
Yes. I can fly. You cannot fly. And he, you know, goes through all that and goes,
yep.
Lands. That wasn't flying. That was falling with style. Oh, yeah, it was just so much good stuff on this.
And then we have the adventure of them out in the world trying to get back to Andy, because Andy's going to Pizza Planet. And at Pizza Planet, we meet Sid a little bit before the Pizza Planet stuff, but we see Sid at Pizza Planet, and obviously Woody and Buzz have to hide from him. They end up hiding in the ball pit of all places.
Yep.
The pit of 1,000 aliens.
Yep, yep. And it's that crane toy, because the claw. Yeah. The claw will choose.
Ooh, the claw.
Yes.
And how they... I don't remember the claw machines having so many generic toys. Like, don't get me wrong, I get the joke, they're all aliens.
Right.
They're all, it's an army of aliens that eventually, as the films progress, will latch on to Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head, and we then get a whole full circle thing in the third movie, which we'll talk about later with them. But every claw machine I've ever seen never had two of the same toy.
Yeah.
Never had the same toy over and over and over again, which, like I said, I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying it's interesting for the movie that they basically just stuck the... It's like, the claw will choose, and you know, so Sid goes over to the claw machine, and he ends up winning the Buzz Lightyear.
And he was kind of shocked by that, too, but he's like, cool!
Yeah, cool. Let's go home and play with rockets.
Yeah.
Sid is a dark, dark child.
Oh, but you know, the thing is that we all knew a Sid.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we all knew that kid who would destroy toys and blow them up and all that, so.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't think, I almost wish, Like, I know by the end of the first movie, the plot with Sid was kind of wrapped up, and that's all well and good. I almost wish we would have seen him again in one of the other movies at some point or another, just to see if he grew out of his destructive...
You know what I mean? It would have been kind of nice to see him, like, in the third film, and we can get to that. But, like, you know, obviously because Andy's older and all that, seeing Sid maybe going off to college as well.
Yeah, that would have been pretty
nice
cool.
Nice touch.
Yeah. Let's see. So they go to Pizza Planet. Sid wins them, takes them back to his house. Everybody assumes that Wood and Buzzy are dead.
Mike, did I lose you?
Yeah, hold on. Your audio is coming in and out. I'm still here.
There we go. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah, something came unplugged again, just like last time. That's what happened last time. It came unplugged or something or other.
Yeah, my cat stepped on the USB cord. I apologize.
Stupid animals.
Yes.
All right. We'll talk about Sid a little bit later. Woody and Buzz end up at Sid's, and the rest of the toys think that, you know, Woody killed Buzz and whatever else. They're not going to help him, and he's stuck at Sid's, and this, you know, drives Woody to a slightly deep depression, and Buzz comes to realize while he's at Sid's that he is just a toy.
Yep.
And then they kind of become friends and figure out, oh, hey, we need to get out of here. With the help of Sid's really screwed up experimental toys.
Oh, God.
They end up, that whole scene, the whole entire scene from first meeting the toys to when Woody and Buzz make the plan to the whole thing outside in the sandbox. And once again, if you're seeing this movie for the first time, you do not expect once Sid pulls... Woody's string. You do not expect Woody to come to life. So play nah. You do. Oh. I love these movies, but I have not watched the first one in at least 10 years. Oh, so yeah. Going back and watching it again, it was just simply amazing.
It was that whole scene when Sid's holding Woody, and Woody, like, opens his eyes and looks at him and starts talking. It just, like, that was creepy as hell, but it was cool. That's the best way to put it. He's just like, and I remember thinking, and of course he's there and he's going, oh my God. He goes, when you kind of rose up out of the sand and you did this and you did that, we pulled it off. Oh my God, we broke rules, but so cool.
So, as the first movie comes to an end, they have to chase the moving truck because it's moving day, and everybody except Woody and Buzz end up in the box or in the car. They then figure out a way, because Buzz still has the rocket strapped to his back.
Yeah.
And Woody somehow, like, I know this is a plot device. I know looking at it analytically, it could be considered as, you know, being convenient for the plot. But when I watched it back, I'm like, oh, that's right. Sid did put a match in his belt. That wasn't intentional. And I'm not complaining about it. I'm just saying when I watched it, like, that wasn't intentional at all on the director of the film's part. Sure it was.
Yeah.
So even though sadly the match doesn't even work.
Yeah.
Well, it works, but the car coming, whatever. Anyway. They have this mad dash to get into the car, and at one point they get in the back of the truck, and what, you know, everybody's asking Woody all kinds of questions. Ham and Potato Head are accusing him and all this and all that and everything else, and he goes out and he finds RC, the remote control car, and he's like, So I don't think anyone said this, but I think someone said he's stealing RC, and all I can think of is Grand Theft Auto.
Oh, God.
So he steals RC. He goes off. He goes to rescue Buzz. And this is where it comes in earlier about the match and the match not working because the car rolled by and extinguished the match. And they used the sunlight to get the wick lit. And then they realize, I have a rocket strapped up, but we just lit a... Whoa. Yeah. So the rocket, zoom, goes shooting off. They end up becoming airborne. Buzz opens up his wings. He ends up flying. They drop RC so he'll slide into the back of the van. And Woody's like, Buzz, you missed the truck. We're not aiming for the truck. And ends up in the back seat with Andy. And Andy's like, oh, yay, I found the toys. And
yeah, it was such a good moment. And just putting that together, when you see it, it's kind of like, mm-hmm. oh. And of course, his mom was like, oh, you must have left him from when we went to Pizza Port the other night in the car.
Yeah.
You know, or Pizza Planet. Just, they did such a good job with putting all these things together. You know, oh, man.
So the film closes as, the first film closes as it's Christmas time. And they're in the new house, the smaller house. They do another reconnaissance mission, you know, curious as to what new toy is going to be worse than Buzz, as Woody is worried about that.
Oh, yeah. And they're both kind of like, you know, it's not going to be anything. We're not going to have anything to worry about.
It's a puppy. They both share a worried look. It's a puppy.
Oh, yeah.
Going back and rewatching this first film was absolutely amazing. I love this movie still today.
Oh, God, yes. It is a perfect film. I mean, I can't think of anything really wrong with it other mm-hmm. than, I mean, and this is a very niggling thing. Mm-hmm. When you watch the film, especially if you watch 1, 2, and 3 in succession,
uh-huh.
you can see one is dated in the sense of,
well,
you can
yeah.
look at the animation, you can kind of go, okay, I can see where they progressed. That's the only, and it's a very minor thing, because even then I'm still impressed with the animation style, with everything they pulled off with it.
You know, we did a couple of years ago on GCR, and we did a whole podcast on Beast Wars and Beast Machines, reviewing every episode of both of those Transformers cartoons. And my buddy Michael Wilson, when we were doing the Beast Wars reviews at the time, he's like, yeah, this is 1996 animation. And I'm like, well, yeah, it's because the show's, well, the next year it'll be its 20th anniversary. But I'm like, you know, that's because the show is so old. And yeah, it's going to be different. And the thing with Toy Story 1 is, yes, you can clearly tell that the movie does date itself a little bit. But I mean,
it still goes beyond that. You're not stuck with that.
Okay, watching Toy Story 1 now, 20 years later, compared to watching Transformers Generation 1 30 years later, there's a huge difference there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, the second movie, which we will get to here in a moment.
Hey, Ham! Look! I'm Picasso!
I don't get it.
You uncultured swine! What are you looking at, you hockey puck?
I just don't think I can take that kind of rejection.
Maybe forever.
Woody, you're not a collector's item. You're a child's plaything. You are a toy!
So, with the second film, this one got released in 1999. So, 4 years after the first film. And this one, it starts off with Woody preparing to go to cowboy camp with Andy. And he, you know, through some rough playing, there's a rip in Woody's arm. This means that Andy decides to leave him behind. Because in case he would break, so Andy's mom puts him on the shelf.
Yeah.
And while on the shelf, Woody finds Wheezy. I'm like, wait a minute, where's George?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, wrong Wheezy. And Wheezy was a penguin squeak toy. He's been up on the shelf for years, and because his squeaker doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that kind of made me, like, I was sad to see that. And I know it's stupid, it's just a toy, you know, but it's kind of like, oh my God, I remember stuff like that. And, you know, you always wonder, whatever happened to these toys looking back? And, you know, oh, Mom put it on a shelf, or Mom put it in the attic, and then you find out later, Mom sold it at a garage sale for $5.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Woody gets shelled, and everybody is just astounded, just shocked that she would shell Woody. And this eventually gets to the point where she goes up and rummages around on the shelf looking for toys for her yard sale. And most of these are stuff that Andy's never gonna... they're not his go-to toys. They're, you know, toys he hasn't played with in years or anything like that. It's not Rex, it's not Ham, it's not any of the major characters. But for some odd reason, she finds Wheezy. And Woody's like, oh, time for a rescue mission. So we meet Buster.
Yeah.
Buster as a puppy is awesome. Buster later, not so much.
Yes. Well, I laughed with Buster because he's like, they're doing the whole thing at the very beginning with Buster where it's like, sit, roll over, you know, and of course,
reach for the sky.
Yeah. And of course, you know, Andy's trying to get him to do tricks and he won't do tricks for him at all, but he's listening to Buzz and Woody. No problem whatsoever. I have a dog like that.
Now, Wheezy was originally voiced by Joe Rent. His singing voice, though, you know who his singing voice was?
Robert Goulet.
Yeah. That was just awesome.
Oh, I heard it. I started laughing. I'm like, oh my God, I know that voice.
So we get the yard sale adventure. Sadly, that probably shouldn't have happened because this is where the plot kind of kicks in, because a guy in a chicken suit, or I should say Newman, yes, in a chicken suit.
Night.
Al from Al's Toy Barn shows up at the yard sale looking for all kinds of stuff, and he finds Woody. And Andy's mom specifically says, oh, how'd that get out here? It's not for sale, blah, blah, blah. He creates some havoc, ends up stealing Woody, bringing him back to his penthouse in the sky, which...
Wow, you just can't get away from that link with Wheezy, can you? That deluxe apartment in the sky.
It's a penthouse in the sky. I mean, come on. He lives on, like, the top floor. It's kind of hard not to make that joke.
Yeah.
What's so crazy to me about Al and his surroundings, his toy store and the area his toy store is in looks like shit, yet his penthouse building right across the street looks like an immaculate city block.
Yes.
It's like two worlds converge here. It's like, wow, this is just so wrong. So,
well, the funny thing is that's based on Emeryville area, where I've actually been up there, driven past Pixar Studios, and as you're driving by, like, there are some really nice buildings in there, and then all of a sudden, literally across the street, it looks like shit. So I kind of go, yeah, I see where they got the whole Al's Toy Barn and, you know, the building there. Looks, yeah, not bad.
Yeah. So Al steals Woody, because Woody apparently is a part of Woody's Roundup Gang, and it's this old show and old toys, and we meet Jesse, we meet Bullseye, and we meet the evil prospector, Stinky Pete.
voiced by none other than Frasier.
Beast himself, yes. Yeah. Mr. Down Periscope.
Yes.
Oh, God. You look at that guy. You look at Kelsey Grammer. And everything he voices is just so... He has one of those voices for voice acting. He's a great actor on live, you know, on live action and all that. But recently, because this is Christmas time in 2015, I don't know why I decided to do this, but I decided to go back and watch Once Upon a Time and twice, Once Upon a Christmas and Twice Upon a Christmas, the Mickey stuff,
you know,
the Mickey Mouse stuff.
How can you not with ABC Family running it left and right? So it's okay. Well, I get it.
They're on Netflix. I'm watching them without commercials, thank God. But it's just one of those things where I decided to watch a few Christmas specials, and whatever was on Netflix, I figured, oh, sure, why not? Because I haven't seen any Christmas stuff on Hulu just yet. I haven't really looked into it. But so anyway, I'm watching Once Upon a Christmas from, you know, the Mickey Mouse stuff, and Kelsey is the narrator in that. And he does such a good job. I mean, the man is just amazing. So,
oh, yeah.
So Kelsey is the villain here as Stinky Pete the Prospector. And Al's whole plan is he's going to get rich. He's never going to have to wear a chicken suit again. He is sending them over to Japan because they're going to be in this museum. They're going to be collector. It's basically what he finds out. He's a collector item toy.
Yep.
And he's Andy's toy. He doesn't want to be there. And we learn about what Jesse went through, and we learn about kind of, well, at the end we learn about what Prospector went through, but not really.
Yeah.
So we get these, so we have the traditional cast that we had in the first film, and then we get introduced to all these new characters. What did you think of the new characters in the second film?
Well, Jesse was kind of annoying, but you know what? I tolerated her. I was kind of like, okay, she's there. We get to learn a little bit about her past and what happened with her and why she's kind of been shelved, for lack of a better term for it, as to what happened to her. Stinky Pete, I thought he was great. And I was kind of like, my whole thought when I saw this, I'm going to bring up another Christmas film that I've seen, Jingle All the Way. And the reason I bring this up is because everybody in Jingle All the Way wanted Turbo Man, and nobody wanted his sidekick companion. And his sidekick companion, everybody would see it on the shelf. Well, this was kind of the same thing with Stinky Pete, is that everybody wanted Woody and Jesse, and nobody wanted Stinky Pete, and he sat on the shelf at the thrift stores. You know, that's the whole reason why he was there. And so I saw that, and I kind of kept making that, you know, that link there for it. So
So it then becomes a mystery and an action piece to rescue Woody, find out where Woody went. And I love how Buzz decides to use the speak and spell. Oh my God. I remember having one of those. Like, that's the coolest thing about this franchise, folks. All these old toys. Now, I don't know if it was Pixar's, like, if they had a licensing deal to make, you know, to make these toys more in the now so people could remember them back then or anything like that, or if it was just that they wanted them in the movie because they wanted Andy to have classic toys. I don't know.
Well, but funny thing about that, because that was actually something that they brought up at the panel that I went to. And John Lasseter actually said, he goes, you know what? We all had these toys as kids. We all played with them. They all sat around our rooms. We wanted to bring back that same memory, and we didn't want to have people going, oh, here's some odd toy that we've never heard of that's very similar to a speak and spell, or here's this piece that, you know, looks kind of like a barrel of monkeys but really isn't. He fought for that, and he said, we have to do this. And he said that's part of what made Toy Story, the Toy Story franchise, what it was, because so many people were pushing to have these toys in there, and it brought back your childhood memories, which is really what they were aiming for. And I said, you know what, I'm glad for that. I really am, because that made the film so well.
Yep. So I didn't mention this earlier, but this movie opens like and it doesn't say this on Wikipedia or anything like that, but it opens with Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah.
Like, it opens with a full animatic of Buzz Lightyear. Like, Buzz is on some mission against, you know, fighting Emperor Zurg. And I'm thinking, I remember when I first saw this, and even when I rewatched it recently for this episode, I'm like, wait a minute. Did they go full animated? Are they not doing the traditional Toys Are Alive, Toys Aren't Alive when humans? What's going on here? Come to find out, Rex is playing a Buzz Lightyear of Star Command video game.
Yes.
I love how they did that intro, because it basically shatters all your expectations of how, and they do it again in the third film. We'll talk about that a little bit later, but I love how they open that up, because they then tie it back in when all the toys get to Al's Toy Barn, because they assume that Woody has been taken to Al's Toy Barn once they figure out through Etch-a-Sketch. Everybody had it. I couldn't do I could do circles and triangles on Etch-a-Sketch. I could not do half the stuff that is done on that thing in this movie, but oh my god, do I remember having fun with an Etch-a-Sketch. So after Etch draws the man in a chicken suit, they realize it's Al's Toy Barn. They find Al's Toy Barn, they go in, and it's this giant toy store. You know, Barbie aisle, Buzz Lightyear aisle, and
that
I'm tour guide Barbie.
Oh god, yes. And so that was just hilarious, you know. And of course, they're driving by, you know, they're seeing all Buzz Lightyears, and she's making comments about how popular it was.
Well, this is in 1995, and
all these things. It's just like, oh god.
I love because at this point, I believe Mrs. Potato Head was here, right?
Yeah, because
they got Mrs.
Potato Head for Christmas.
For Christmas, that's right. That's one thing I didn't mention earlier. So at the end of Toy Story 1, they get Mrs. Potato Head. So when they pull up to the Barbie thing, and tour guide Barbie gets out and hops in the car, and all you can hear is Don Rickles as Mr. Potato Head saying, "Oh, I'm married spud, I'm a married spud, I'm a married spud." And then Cliff, I can only call him Cliff Clavin, folks.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, John Rasberger, I love the man, but I can only call him Cliff Clavin because I loved him on Cheers. So Ham says, "Oh, move over for the single fellas." Like, oh, God.
Well, he was a pig, you know, so.
Yeah. I just absolutely love the interactions between those two.
Oh,
it's just so, it's just so cool. So we have Barbie, we have Buzz, and Buzz goes into his own aisle, and Buzz is at a point in his toy life where he realizes he is a toy, and sadly the programming of the Buzz Lightyears, obviously, you know, they want it to be realistic and whatever else, and apparently this is a new upgraded version of Buzz. He has a new utility belt, and he tries to steal the belt from the one that's on display. Well, the one that's on display wakes up and says, "Oh, you know, you must be an agent of Zurg. You can't be out of your hypersleep thing." And,
yeah.
And so we get a switcheroo with Buzz, and the real Buzz ends up trapped, and the fake Buzz ends up going with the team. Somehow, I don't remember how, I think it was maybe when they took a corner wrong and knocked something over, but an Emperor Zurg toy gets out.
Yes.
I can't quite I just saw these damn movies like 3 days ago, but I just can't remember how Zurg got out. But an Emperor Zurg gets out, and the whole they turn it into a big, really, really funny Star Wars moment.
Oh, God, yes.
So we get to the penthouse because they realize that Woody is not at the store. They get over to the penthouse. They go up through the ventilation shafts. They get reintroduced to Woody and his new friends. And they, you know, Buzz, the real Buzz, keeps trying to explain to him, hey, look, you know, you're Andy's toy, you know, you need to be with him, blah, 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 and Pete's not having it and everything else. And we find out that Stinky Pete really is the villain. And as they go to escape to save them, we see Zurg and Buzz, the other Buzz, the fake Buzz, they decide to have a, you know, father-son relationship. Like, oh my god. Oh.
That was great. The I am your father bit, you know, it's just like, oh god.
George Lucas is going to sue somebody.
Yeah.
Not that he can anymore, but... so we have that. And we have Jessie, who the reason why she wants to go to the museum is because she doesn't believe anymore in kids wanting to play with toys, and we get her whole origin about her kid Emily, and we see in this flashback with Jessie and Emily that Emily is, we don't actually see, we see little glimpses of Emily, but we don't actually fully see her on the screen. But one of the things she has is the same red cowboy, white-rimmed hat, cowgirl, white-rimmed hat that Andy has.
Yes.
So, it's only because I read a certain article online that I now believe this. I didn't catch it at the time, but since then, obviously, I have. The assumption and... assumption and conspiracy theory is that Emily is Andy's mom. Because why would he have a hat that looks like Jesse's instead of a hat that looks like Woody's? Unless it was his mom's.
Very true.
So, we'll get into who Andy's, you know, we'll get into all that conspiracy stuff a little bit later. So, we then get to the airport, and they have a fun little, I wonder if that's really what the backside of the baggage claim looks like. I mean, sure, we can go back to Die Hard 2 and watch it and find out, but still. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I really wonder if that's really what the baggage claim looks like back there at the airport. But we have this whole thing with them trying to get to the toys to free them. We have Stinky Pete and still trying to you know, stop them from doing that. And we end up with Woody and Jessie in the plane. They climb down through the landing gear, and you have an upstart space toy on a horse.
Yeah.
You got Buzz on Bullseye, and Woody sees the little clasp thing for his little string. He swings down, and all is safe. We go back to Andy's. Andy welcomes the new toys with open arms.
You know, I got to bring that up just for a second, because I was always kind of like, he gets these new toys and he doesn't question at all where Bullseye came from, where Jesse came from. All of a sudden, it's like, boom.
He thinks that his mom got them for him.
Does he? Okay. I apologize.
Because he says thanks, mom, for all the new toys. He fixes Woody's arm, and Al's toy barn is, you know, where everything is a bok, bok, bok.
And he's crying. Yes.
Yes, he's crying. And Stinky Pete ends up with Amy, some child named Amy, who we never see again. And the Barbie that's in her backpack. No, seriously. Like, Amy could really be Jack Napier. Honestly, she could. Because the Barbie turns around and she goes, you're going to like Amy. She's an artist. First thing I thought of was the reveal of Alicia in Batman 89.
Oh, God,
and
yes.
She takes off the mask from the Joker. Oh, God. And Stinky Pete's not too happy about that. You know, so Wheezy Squeaker was fixed. They do a Frank Sinatra-style version of You Got a Friend in Me. And that's kind of where the movie leaves off. I know a lot of people don't like the general plot of Toy Story 2. I think it's interesting because it adds character development to the characters we already knew.
Yeah.
You know, it gives Woody a Woody could just be another sheriff doll that Andy's had for years and years and years, but it gives resonance to the fact that he has been Andy's number one toy for the longest time, and come to find out, he was actually a part of this old, howdy-doody kind of show.
Exactly.
Because when the TV turns on, the first thing I thought of was, it's howdy-doody time, and Doc Brown turns the TV off. That's the first thing I thought of.
Yeah, and that's fine with what it was, because it gave you that thing, and... This is, obviously they were trying to make that reference, and it wasn't quite the same thing, but you got the feeling of, hey, it's a kid's show. And what they did with the puppetry there, I thought that was brilliant. I think that they actually did make puppets, and they filmed it rather than, trying to do computer animation for the puppets there, because it looked just like actual puppets running around there on the screen.
Right, yeah.
They did such a good job with that, and I was very, very impressed with it, how everything put together. And I kind of wanted to go, hey, I wonder if they're going to have anything with that show. I want to see something with it,
Yeah, absolutely. I dig Toy Story 2. I think Toy Story 2 is a fun little film that bridges the gap between, because this supposedly takes place just after they moved into their new house. So it's probably just a little bit after Christmas, like the first of the year, maybe February or March or whatever else. Then obviously the third movie, because it came out so many years in between the second movie. Obviously Andy's grown up at that point. But the second movie, I really dig it. I think it's fun.
I was very pleasantly surprised because... When I first heard that they were doing a Toy Story 2, I was worried. You always hear, sequels, and they're never as good as the first one. And this one here, I would say it's right there as good as the first one. They knocked it out of the park with this. And it's just, it stands on its own. It does not need, it helps that you've seen Toy Story 1.
Yeah,
but Toy Story 2, it's definitely, it pulls it right out. So I'm glad for that.
Absolutely.
Ow! What are you doing?
You're in direct violation of code 6404.5, stating all Space Rangers are to be in hypersleep until awakened by authorized personnel. You're breaking ranks, Ranger. Buzz Lightyear to Star Command. I've got an AWOL Space Ranger.
Tell me I wasn't this deluded.
No backtalk. I have a laser, and I will use it.
You mean the laser that's a light bulb?
Has your mind been melded? You could have killed me, Space Ranger. Or should I say, traitor? I don't have time for this. Halt! I order you to halt! Listen to me,
What is your problem? Look, I'm sorry I can't help you guys out. Really, I am. But you didn't have to go and pull a stunt like that.
What? You think I did that?
Oh, right. Yeah, the TV just happened to turn on and the remote magically ended up in front of you.
You calling me a liar?
Well, if the boot fits...
Say that again.
If the boot fits.
Okay, cowboy.
You would not believe what I've been through tonight.
Darling, are you okay?
I feel fresh, healthy.
It's terrible.
All right, folks, it is Toy Story 3 time. This one came out, 5 years ago. So, actually, it was 11 years between this and the second film.
Wow.
Yeah, 99 to 2010, somewhere around 10, 11 years. In this one, Andy is 17 years old. He's about to leave for college, and his toys have not been played with for years. And he intends to only take Woody to college, and everybody's worried about, oh, we're going to be sold, we're going to be trashed, or are we going to be put in the attic? And this is the movie where I was like, oh my God, what are they going to do? And you bring in Sunnyside Daycare.
Oh. When I saw that, I was kind of like, oh my God.
Now it's it's a whole new adventure.
Yeah.
This isn't about, you know, staying Andy's toys. This isn't about, this is about them going off and finding a whole new thing to do. And it couldn't have worked out better, yes. Honestly.
It was Aladdin and Jasmine in a whole new world.
Yeah, absolutely. This movie, it takes the first two and builds upon it so much with the toys characterization, because by now they're all friends.
Yeah.
As it says in the beginning of the movie, lots of the toys have gone away. Bo Peep is no longer there. Wheezy is no longer there. Apparently he got sold in another yard sale at some point or another. And Andy's in the process of moving out, because like I said, he's going to college. And he's got to figure out what to do with these old toys. And this film opens up with the Western chase.
Yes.
This is awesome, because you got Potato Head and Mrs. Potato Head with the aliens as their children working for Dr. Porkchop, a.k.a. Ham.
Yes.
I think Potato Head character's name is Black Eyed Bart, I think. I think that's what it is.
I think so.
Yeah. First of all, and we'll talk about this here in a little bit when we get to the cast and stuff after talking about the third film, but we didn't really talk about this. Mrs. Potato Head is voiced by Estella Harris, who is George Can't Stand Ya's mother.
Yes.
It works so well.
Oh God, she was perfect for it.
I remember in the second film, we didn't bring this up. I remember when she's packing for him. Oh, here's your a new pair of shoes, an extra pair of shoes, and your angry eyes, and she's putting all this stuff in Potato Head, and I'm like, there's no way he has that much storage space. Yeah. There's just no way. But I just love her. I love her as that character, as Mrs. Potato Head. And the toys have this one last ditch effort to get Andy to play with them, and it doesn't work. Then they all realize, oh, hey, we need to get ready for storage in the attic. They were going to be put in storage in the attic, but Andy, instead of putting them in a box, puts them in a garbage bag. And he goes to put them in the attic, but his sister Molly calls him to help her, and the toys end up just sitting there in a bag. Mom picks them up, think it's trash, and puts it out by the trash. This then starts the whole thing of the entire movie, where they end up at Sunnyside. And Woody doesn't want to be there, obviously. They all want to get home to Andy. We meet Lotso Huggenbear, voiced by Ned Beatty, of all people. We meet Ken. So, here's the thing, folks. The Ken doll in this. You have Jodie Benson voicing Barbie. You have Michael Keaton voicing Ken. You have Ariel and Batman dating.
Yep.
Because Jodie Benson was the voice of Ariel in Little Mermaid.
Well, and you know that this was not the first time that Michael Keaton had voiced for Pixar, right?
Right, yeah.
I pointed that out to somebody the other day. They're like, really? He voiced something else? I go, yeah, he was Ken, and he was Chick from Cars.
Cars, yeah.
And they go, oh my God, you're right.
Yep, yep. Yep. But I mean, just thinking about that, I mean, just, you know.
Yeah.
in their classic roles, him as Batman, her as the voice of the Little Mermaid, is like, Oh my God. And their voices work so well together.
Oh God, yes.
I love the scene where Ken just breaks down. I am not a girl's toy. Yes, you are.
Oh, I you know, some of the stuff, like when he's in there, he's in his mansion and he's showing her all the different outfits, and I'm just kind of like, you're gay. You're gay. Let's just call it what it is. That with the ascot and the scarves tied around your neck.
The ascot. Next thing I'm waiting for is, you know, Shaggy and Velma and Daphne to show up.
Exactly. I thought the same thing. Oh.
I love how sweet and innocent Barbie is at first, and then she goes all evil on him. That's awesome. That's hilarious. So at Sunnyside Daycare, there is a pecking order. And Lotso and Big Baby are at the top. So is Ken and a few other toys. Isn't the octopus voiced by Whoopi Goldberg?
You know, I don't know. She might have been.
Yeah, as Stretch. Okay. Yeah. So as the movie progresses, we see that Lotso was someone's toy at one point or another. Someone left him behind, lost him, whatever, and then replaced him, which then makes him so mad that, you know, he believes that every toy is replaceable, that it doesn't matter what, you know, emotional resonance a kid has with a toy. And he just turns into this just masterfully. If you want a villain, get a pink stuffed bear that smells like strawberries.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy is like, oh my God. They use the bookworm. I thought that was hilarious.
Oh.
To find the Buzz Lightyear manual. And they switch Buzz back to demo mode, which means he is now reverted back to his Buzz Lightyear of Star Command thing.
I love it when they are trying to reprogram him and they accidentally flip him over to the Spanish.
That was just hilarious. And then, of course, this is what, you know, it's kind of implied that he and Jesse are an item already, but once the Spanish mode happens, it really kind of happens for the two of them being a couple or whatever. I thought that was hilarious. Let's see what else. So the clown, Chuckles or whatever his name, I forget what his name is. The clown tells the story of what I already mentioned about Lotso being forgotten and whatever else. And again, they're doing this whole Star Wars thing where essentially Big Baby is Darth Vader.
Yeah.
I just thought that was hilarious. At this daycare, one of the people that run it is Bonnie's mom. And Bonnie is this little precocious girl who does what Andy used to do with his toys. You know, she plays with them and has adventures with them and makes up all this cool stuff. And during Woody's escape, he ends up somehow being in Bonnie's backpack, ends up at her house. We then meet James Bond and Patty from Seinfeld.
Yeah.
We have Timothy Dalton and Christopher Warburton as two of her toys, and Bond is Mr. Pricklepants, and it's like, oh my God, that is so.
And he's classically trained.
Yeah, that was hilarious. So Dalton, so awesome. Woody tries to get back because he finds out about what Sunnyside really is. We, you know, try to get a rescue mission in on again, and they end up at the dump because Lotso just throws them in the trash, and he ends up in the trash as well. And this is where the aliens come in. This is why I said the third movie kind of goes full circle on them. Because they get to control the claw.
I got to be honest. That point when I saw them heading for the incinerator.
Yeah.
Okay. I saw this at the drive-in, and my wife is sitting there looking at me, and I'm looking at her, and I look over, and she's got tears rolling down her eyes, and I'm like, it's okay. Obviously, they're going to get out of this. Mm-hmm. But she's practically crying. My mom said she was tearing up when she saw it, and I just was like, you know, you kind of get this scared moment because you think, this is the third one. This could be the end for everything, and this is where it's ending. Even though you know in the back of your head that it's not going to end this way, you still think, oh my God, this could be the end, and this is what happens to the toys, you know, that basically don't go on past this.
Mm-hmm. I remember the trailer, one of the trailers for this movie showed this part of the scene, and that's kind of where it ended.
Yeah.
And then they put up the logo, and I'm like, oh my God, no. But obviously, the aliens save them. They end up at Bonnie's. Ken and Barbie end up being together, and they end up, you know, reforming Sunnyside and making vast improvements, and Lotso ends up on.
Oh, that
he ends
great.
Up on the front of a truck.
Yeah, and he like sees another thing that's tied there, and it's covered with bugs, and he's just like, oh yeah. God,
keep your mouth closed. Yeah. Yep. And the last 20 minutes of this movie where Andy and Bonnie are, I don't know if it's 20 minutes or not, last 10 minutes, 15 minutes, whatever it is, where Andy and Bonnie are talking about his toys and you know, he doesn't know because the whole crux of this franchise is no one ever knows when the toys go out and do stuff. Like, nobody ever knew about the Pizza Planet thing or any of that stuff or the whole Woody's Roundup and whatever else, but he doesn't know that Bonnie already knew Woody because she had already had him. Specifically, that, you know, his, you know, Andy's cowboy. And he's hesitant at first about giving Woody to her. And he does because he realizes he has to move on. And he sees that Bonnie is just as imaginative as he was at that age. And
yeah.
We then start a whole new chapter with Bonnie being the new owner of Andy's toys. I mean, Toy Story 3, I love it.
Oh,
I really do.
And, you know, I want to say this only because I remember John Lasseter talking about this. And mm-hmm. he said that the whole thing was kind of, Toy Story was basically based on his son. And, mm-hmm. you know, he gave his kid toys and kind of grew up. And when his son was going away to college, that was what prompted the whole storyline for Toy Story 3, and he was kind of like, you know what, this is us closing the door on Toy Story. And he said that this was going to be the end, and mm-hmm. I was kind of like, okay. And when I saw how it ended, I'm like, it is the end, but it's not, in the sense that they complete Andy's story, and it's such a good way that they did it, I think.
Yeah, they complete Andy's story, and they start us potentially on a story for Bonnie. And I love that. In between 3 and, well, actually, yeah, in between 3 and whatever comes next, back in 96, there were actually a series of shorts known as Toy Story Treats.
Yes.
Which are used as interstitials on ABC Family and Disney's 1-2. They didn't necessarily follow the continuity from Toy Story, taking place before, during, and after the events of the first film. They were aired roughly around the time of the Toy Story's release to home video. They have two 22-minute Toy Story television specials. The first, a Halloween-themed special titled Toy Story of Terror.
Oh, have you seen that one yet?
Yes, I love that one.
Oh, Combat Carl.
Combat Carl was awesome, yeah.
Combat Carl was Carl Weathers.
Carl Weathers, yeah.
And I laughed so hard when I saw that. I'm like, oh my God.
It's so good. So Bonnie and her mom are going on a road trip to visit Bonnie's grandmother. Bonnie has brought Buzz, Woody, Jesse Rex, Mr. Prickle Pants, Mr. Potato Head, and Trixie with her. The toys are first seen sitting in the trunk of Bonnie's mother's car, watching a horror film, and the car gets a flat tire. Jesse is knocked into a toolbox. And the whole thing is just absolutely amazing. Absolutely love it. I mean, you got Tom and Tim back as obviously Buddy, Buzz and Woody. You got Joan Cusack as Jesse, and Carl Weathers as Combat Carl, and it's just,
oh yeah,
it's just so awesome. Let me see here. And then there was Toy Story that Time Forgot. This was last year, actually, 2014.
Yeah.
Now, this one I had seen, but I saw it once, but I don't think I ever saw it again.
Yeah.
But it's a Christmas-themed special.
They end up with a bunch of rich. They end up at a friend's house, a friend of Bonnie's house. That basically, the kid who owns the toys, he's just like this rich spoiled kid, and he doesn't really play with the toys.
Mm-hmm.
And he ends up with this entire play set for dinosaurs. That it's, they're like robotic cyborg dinosaur type things. Which I'm trying to think of like Dino Saucers type of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just, I watched it and I was kind of like, okay. Eh.
I mean, I like it. I think it's a cool thing. I think it's a cool way to keep the franchise going without actually having to have another film.
Yeah.
And then we also had three shorts, Toy Story Toons. We had Hawaiian Vacation, Small Fry, and Partysaurus Rex. Hawaiian Vacation is essentially takes place after the events of the third film. Toy Story Small Fry. Let's see. Tokyo Mater. Let's see. The short involved Buzz getting trapped at a fast food restaurant and a support group for discarded toys with kids' meal toy versions of.
I'm gonna have to hunt Buzz that one down. I haven't seen that one.
I've heard of it, but I have not seen it. And then Partysaurus Rex is all about Rex, in the bathtub.
Right.
The short involves Rex getting left in the bathroom and making friends with the bath toys. Overall, I love this franchise. I think it's an amazing, amazing thing. We do have to bring up, and I do want to talk about this just for a little bit here, Toy Story 4. Okay?
Yeah.
We've already said the third film was the end of Andy's story. Toy Story 4, according to several people at Pixar, John Lasseter, and everybody else, is going to be a standalone thing. It's going to be the start of a new era. It's not, you know, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just kind of like, okay, you know, and it's according to Lasseter, is that it's going to focus on Woody and Bo Peep and how Bo Peep was absent in Toy Story 3. Woody and Buzz are going to try and find her and bring her back. And I'm just kind of like, you know what? It should be done with. It's. I know that they want to do something. I don't think they need to do this.
I don't mind if it's like, you know, Bonnie. Because that's my whole thing. Toy Story 3 ended Woody and Buzz and Andy's story. It ended it perfectly. And it set up. It set it up for new adventures with Bonnie, and the thing with Bonnie is, why not have a movie centered around what's going on in her life and what the toys are doing to cope with that or whatever?
Yeah,
I don't necessarily. I mean, I'll see Toy Story 4 eventually. And
oh yeah,
it's not coming out for another 3 years, so it's not like it's, you know, something in 3 years could change and it may not end up as a love story between Woody and Bo Peep. I mean, I don't mind that being a part of a Toy Story movie, but having it as the central focus. This isn't the Cars universe, people. I mean, these are toys who eventually have to be played with Bonnie and whoever, you know, her friends. I mean, I don't think a love story thing would work, but I'm open-minded to whatever happens with Toy Story 4.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give it that. It's just I'm kind of like, that's all.
Mm-hmm. So for the first two films, for the who's who of the movie here, first two films, we have Tom Hanks, Tim Allen, Don Rickles, Jim Varney, Wallace Shawn, John Ratzenberger, Annie Potts, John Morris, Eric Von Detten, Laurie Metcalf, Arlie Ermey, Sarah Freeman, and Penn Jillette as a TV announcer. Wow.
Yeah.
So the core cast here, Jim Varney was Slinky Dog for two out of the three movies. Sadly, Jim Varney passed away before the third film.
And when that happened, I kept thinking Slinky Dog's not going to come back for the third one. They're going to retire him, you know, give him away, whatever, which it would have been okay. I would have been okay with that. And then when I heard
Lake Clark
doing it, I was like, oh my God, he's almost spot on.
Well, Blake Clark was a friend of Jim Varney. And where I know Blake Clark from, where everyone should know Blake Clark from, is Boy Meets World.
Yeah, yeah. So
he was Sean's dad.
Yeah.
Chet Hunter.
And he was that crazy Cajun in The Waterboy. That's where I remember him from.
Yep, he was that. And there, obviously, he's trying his best to do a sound. And I'm not insulting the guy at all. I'm just saying, I'm stating a fact here. He's trying his best to do a sound alike to Jim Varney, and it does somewhat sound like Jim, but not really, because Blake's voice is a little bit deeper than what Jim's is. Jim's was a little bit more high-pitched, but I'm glad that they didn't just write Slinky off, and they do have somebody else who was a friend of Varney and knew what he put into that role doing the voice.
Yeah.
Who sticks out to you among the casts for the three films?
Oh, you know, I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to say, you know, obviously the two big ones, Tim Allen, Tom Hanks. I also like Jodie Benson as Barbie. She was perfect. One of the best things I saw for her is at the very end of Toy Story 2 when they did the outtakes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's sitting there and she's waving and she's like, bye-bye, bye-bye now, bye-bye. Oh, yeah. Has everybody left? Oh my God, we have to stop. My cheeks are starting to hurt. Oh, I laughed so hard with that. And it was so funny that they did that.
Yeah, it really, really was. There is so much trivia to go over for this movie. We'll be here all day. The one big thing that I wanted to bring up with this is, what did you think about John Negroni's, or however you're supposed to say his name, his article about who Andy's mom is supposed to be?
I thought it was interesting. I was kind of like, yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess you could go that way, but it just seems like fans are coming up with odd things that they can splice it all together and make it all into one main world.
Well, I mean, I honestly think it should be one main world. I mean, if it's all encompassing to Toy Story, and like I said earlier in this episode, you know, he's got these screen caps of Andy playing with Woody, and he's wearing the red hat with the white rim, and that's the hat that Jesse has. And we then see that hat on Emily's bed. So, I mean, I like to think that it was that Emily, who was Jesse's original owner, was his mom. He actually did, reluctantly, he did a follow-up article talking about the darker side of it, talking about where Andy's dad is. Nobody wants to know.
Yeah.
It's just too depressing. Nobody wants to know.
Well, and, you know, I remember that James Franco and Anne Hathaway at the Oscars made a joke about that, because they were saying that they were saying that like three of the main movies for the Oscars were being nominated having to do with gays and lesbians. And they went through two of them, and one of them was The Kids Are All Right, and you know, they're like, look, lesbians. And then they go Toy Story 3, and he looks, you know, James Franco says Toy Story 3, and he looks at Anne Hathaway and he goes, Toy Story 3, and she goes, you never saw the dad. The mom was a lesbian, you know. I don't know. It's just kind of like, okay, whatever.
Let's just suck. And those two, they both suck. So
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But no, I mean, I'd like to think Emily was Andy's mom, because that's a nice little turnaround.
Yeah.
You know, because you know, for the story. All three of these movies really stand up to the test of time, even though you had pointed out that some of the animation in the first film doesn't hold up too well. I still think it does.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I say that as a very niggling, minor point to me. When I look back at looking back at it now from a 2015 perspective.
Well, yeah.
You know, and that's why I'm saying what I'm saying. It's don't get me wrong. It was still groundbreaking for when it came out. It was still amazing. It's still that they did such a good job with putting it together. And you look at it now, even now, and you're kind of going, it doesn't remind you of the crappy 3D animation that we have for things like Sophia the First or the Descendants cartoon that they have on Disney. You know, these things. It doesn't look like those. It looks like, you know, it's still carrying on, and you still have a lot of motion and a lot of emotion within the characters.
So the franchise overall has made a lot of money in 20 years. The box office for each film, according to Wikipedia, was for the first film $362 million made, $485 million made for the second film, and $1.063 billion for the third film.
Good Lord.
So this movie, this entire franchise is a multi-billion dollar franchise for Pixar. Now, based on the GCR and Universal rating system, we're going to rate each film individually and then rate the overall franchise. What would you give 0 to 5 stars for Toy Story 1?
Come on, 5 stars.
For me, I'm going to give it a 5 as well. It's still so enjoyable, even after all these years. And Randy Newman's music, not just his actual vocals, but just the score that he put together for the first film is still absolutely amazing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of my favorite songs that he did was like a reprise of You've Got a Friend in Me, where you hear it and he's talking about You Will Go Sailing No More, and I forget what the line is, but it's a sad song, and it's after Buzz falls and his arm gets popped off. And I was kind of like, oh my God, you know, and Buzz kind of comes to that realization that he is not Buzz Lightyear, that he's a toy. And that song just, it made you kind of want to cry and tear up. And it was just so well done. Randy Newman did a great job with that score.
Absolutely. What about the second film? When are you going to give that one?
Second film, I'm going to give that. I'm going to have to go with 5 stars with that one as well, because I was thinking it was going to be, you know, I was that whole, oh, it's a sequel type of thing, and I didn't think it was going to be good. And then I saw it and I was blown away. I said, yeah, they captured everything perfectly again.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly want people to write in, comment on the episode, or write into iTunes, wherever you want to do it, and let us know why people think that Toy Story 2 is the bad one of the franchise, because I just, like I said, 2 or 3 days ago, I just rewatched it again in preparation for this recording, and there's a few little nitpicks, but nothing that is so glaring to give it a negative review, and I'm also going to give it a 5. I just enjoyed Toy Story 2 so much, because you have all the, like we already mentioned, you have all the character development with Woody and all the background with him. You have Buzz, because Woody is missing at this point. You have Buzz stepping up and being the leader.
Yeah.
You know, all that stuff. And Toy Story 3. Oh, God. You people have no soul if you don't cry during this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie, if this was going to be it, if there was not going to be a Toy Story 4, and I, you know, as we've already stated, this is the end of Andy's story and Buzz and Woody's story, his friends and all that stuff, but I can't give it anything else but a 5, because it's just so damn good.
And I'm probably going to take heat for this, but I'm going to give it a 4.5 stars, only because that scene, like when they're at the dump and they're going through the incinerator and you see that bit with the fire coming out, I saw it and I was like, dude, that's scary. I can't imagine taking... Well, okay, I for a little kid...
You're knocking it off for a dumpster fire. You're knocking half a point off for a dumpster fire, really?
Well, I'm sitting here thinking, would I want to take, you know, my kids to see something like that where they're going to be possibly traumatized and, oh my God, that's what's happening to my toys, you know? And then I'm never going to be able to get rid of any toys with, you know, my kids? I don't know that I necessarily want to have that happen. That's the only reason why, and I'm kind of like, okay, it was good. It was just was. That's my only little point, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I'm knocking it down half a star.
Yeah.
So.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and we'll be back with final thoughts after this. We'll also rate the overall franchise. Be back in a moment.
These guys are professionals. They're the best. Come on, I'm not lying down on the job.
Twitch. Barbie's different.
Oh, Mr. Softy over here.
What do you expect from a girl's toy?
I'm not a girl's toy. I'm not.
All right, we're back, and a little bit of trivia for you folks.
We have got to mention, obviously, there were some nice little nods. One of the things that I remembered seeing in Toy Story, there is a scene when they're at Sid's house, and a toolbox falls on Buzz. Did you happen to notice what the name on the toolbox was?
Yes. It was Binford Tools.
Straight out of Home Improvement from Tim Allen. Yep. That was a nice little nod. If you noticed that in the original Toy Story, there was a license plate on Andy's mom's car. And it said A113. For anybody who's in animation, anybody who goes to CalArts, A113 happens to be the lab room and like the intro to animation class that you go through if you're studying at CalArts, California Institute for the Arts.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where 90% of Disney animators come out of nowadays, is out of CalArts up in Valencia.
Yeah, and A113 isn't just in the first film. It's in all three, and it's in Cars as well.
It shows up in every single film. They make some sort of reference to it. There was a bit about the directive A113 in Wall-E. It's shown up various places throughout the series.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. One thing I want to bring up is... You are a child's plaything. You are a sad, strange little man. And for people that don't know, you are a sad, strange little man is something that Tim Taylor would say to Al Borland all the time. And then to reverse that, when Last Man Standing started a few years ago, its first season, the pilot episode, one of the daughters asks him something, and he says, "That's right, to infinity and beyond."
Oh, God.
I love this franchise, folks. Overall, the franchise in its entirety, the shorts, the little Hawaiian Vacation, all that stuff, and then the Toy Story of Terror, the Toy Story that Time Forgot, I think they're all very well done and put together, and I can't say anything negative about the shorts or anything like that, and the movies themselves, they stand the test of... That first movie still stands the test of time to me. It is not... Okay, sure, some of the references and some of the things in it may be dated a little bit, but... the overall feeling, the overall story, the overall message behind the first film still stands true 20 years later. Somebody said, supposedly, hopefully by the time this episode airs, they're supposed to be airing some 20th anniversary special on ABC about Toy Story. And somebody said Joss Whedon is going to appear, and I, this is on Twitter, and I remarked, why? He co-wrote the, or he co-directed whatever, he, I had no idea, like, I knew Steve Jobs had something to do with Pixar, I had no idea Joss Whedon, of all friggin' people, had something to do with Toy Story.
Well, let me fill you in on Steve Jobs there for just a second, because I was actually at, my mom took me the year that we first heard about cars. Mm-hmm. We went to the Anaheim Pond. Where the Ducks play in Anaheim. Okay. They had a Disney stockholders meeting. Mm-hmm. And we're there and they're talking about the state of the stocks and all that. And John Lasseter was there. And he starts talking about what happened with Pixar. And this is, they made the announcement that day the day before, that Pixar had been sold to Disney. And mm-hmm. he stood up there on the stage and he said, you know what? He goes, Pixar, I have to thank Steve Jobs, because Steve Jobs was apparently on the board of, he was one of the main board holders for Disney.
And he was one of the main money contributors.
Yes. And he goes, Steve, we lost a lot of Steve's money. A lot of Steve's money.
Yeah.
He goes, but thank you, Steve. Thank you for making us what we are. Well,
you know, if you watch that original documentary of how, I forget what it's called. It might be on Netflix or Hulu. I don't know.
The Pixar story.
The Pixar story. There you go. If you watch that, Steve's in that. I mean, very, very young, fat looking Steve Jobs before he got sick and whatever else. But yeah, I mean, you know, to have the CEO or the main guy, main co-founder behind Apple in on an animation company, that just, I remember when I first saw that, I was like, what, really? Seriously? That's awesome.
Yeah.
So what are you going to rate the franchise overall?
Overall, I'm going to give it 5 stars.
Yeah.
You know, I know that one little half star. Okay. Overall, this is still a great series. It's something that even 20 years later, you can show to your kids. 30, 40 years later, it's going to be, this is a Disney classic as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to rate it right up there with, you know, Sleeping Beauty and I know you hate Snow White, but Snow White and all the others, God. You know, yeah, I know.
Movie.
It's within that huge Disney umbrella, which everybody holds up and goes, okay, these are Disney films. Toy Story is in that same market.
Absolutely. I'm also going to, I can't not give it a 5, because it, watching these films again just brought so much joy back into my heart as far as seeing these again. Because like I said, I haven't seen the first film in 10 years. The second film, maybe I saw bits and pieces of it over the last 5 years or so. But, I mean, and obviously the third film came out just 5 years ago. But it's just one of those things where going back to it, finally doing it for Tooncast Beyond and celebrating its 20th anniversary. I mean, there have just been so many things. You know, we didn't even talk about Buzz Lightyear of Star Command, the whole animated series Buzz had. That was awesome.
You know, I only saw like one or two episodes of it, but I remember thinking, wow, they got Patrick Warburton to do the voice of Buzz.
Yeah. It was kind of awesome. All right. Where can the people get in contact with you online, sir?
If you guys want to go out and check out Talking About My Generation, you can find us at mygenerationpodcast.com. You can write us at mygenerationpodcast@gmail.com. If you want to reach me on Twitter, I am at @sprzout, at Sprzout. I know. I ain't changing it now.
Oh, boy. Thank you for joining us here on Tooncast Beyond. There's always, get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. You can comment on this and all of our other episode posts. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter at ToonCastBeyond is the show. Twitter mine is TFG1 Mike. You can also follow at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. Call the voicemail line. Tell us the show you're leaving the message for and your name, 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of ToonCast Beyond and wish you'll join us next time where we will be giving you our thoughts on Season 1 of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2003. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Doug Abel.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
We are so glad you came. Bye-bye. 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 Bye-bye now. Bye. Bye-bye. Remember, please discard all candy wrappers and popcorn containers in the nearest trash receptacle. Thank you. Okay, bye-bye now. Bye-bye. Bye. Okay. Are they all gone? Is everybody gone? Huh? Good. Oh my gosh, my cheeks are killing me. I can't keep smiling like this anymore. I am exhausted. I think I need a break. A little break? Okay.
Hey, Mom. So, you really think I should donate these?
It's up to you, honey. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah, right now, actually.
So, what can we do for you?
I have some toys here.
Ooh, you hear that, Bonnie?
So you're Bonnie? I'm Andy. Someone told me you're really good with toys. These are mine, but I'm going away now. So I need someone really special to play with them.
This is Jessie, the roughest, toughest cowgirl in the whole West. She loves critters, but none more than her best pal, Bullseye.
Yeehaw!
Here.
This is Rex. The meanest, most terrifying dinosaur who ever lived.
Roar! Roar!
The potato heads, Mr. and Mrs. You gotta keep them together because they're madly in love. Now Slinky here is as loyal as any dog you could want. And Ham, he'll keep your money safe. But he's also one of the most dastardly villains of all time.
Evil Dr. Porkchop!
These little dudes are from a strange alien world, Pizza Planet. And this is Buzz Lightyear, the coolest toy ever. Look, he can fly. Oh, and shoot lasers. He's sworn to protect the galaxy from the evil Emperor Zurg.
To infinity and beyond.
Now, you gotta promise to take good care of these guys. They mean a lot to me.
My cowboy!
Woody? What's he doing in there?
There's a snake in my boot.
What?
There's a snake in my boot!
Woody, he's been my pal for as long as I can remember. He's brave, like a cowboy should be. And kind and smart. But the thing that makes Woody special is he'll never give up on you. Ever. He'll be there for you, no matter what. You think you can take care of him for me? Okay, then.
Oh, no! Dr. Porkchop's attacking the Haunted Bakery! Pew, pew,
pew. The ghosts are getting away! Woody, stop them!
Buzz Lightyear, the rescue!
So long.